So we're going to go through a couple of things that we're going to talk about. And one thing that's kind of come out, Philip, in recent years that I was really surprised when I first started to hear it, was the difference between tumors that start in the left side of the colon versus the right side in terms of how you treat them with metastatic disease. So it seemed kind of counterintuitive. Phil, maybe you can just sort of tell that story a little bit about what we learned. It seems almost like they're two different diseases.
Well, not only two different diseases, Neil, but two different probably organs, because if you look at the pathology and molecular pathology, there are differences between the right side and the left side. And if you look at the way cancers are diagnosed, it's a bit of a different thing, because I don't know if you know that using colonoscopy is more helpful on the left side than on the right side. And there are reasons for that. So you're dealing with two different organs in many ways, going back to embryology and also the molecular makeup. For that reason, we learned over the last 10 years that right-sided colon tumors don't do as well on chemotherapy when they have metastatic disease compared to left-sided colon tumors, but also they don't respond the same. So basically we have like bevacizumab, we use it in adding it to chemotherapy. We know the benefit. And we also have the anti-EGFR drugs, monoclonal antibodies, and this includes the panitumumab and the cetuximab. And the studies have shown that the anti-EGFR drugs tend to work much better in the left side than they do on the right side. So for that reason, what we've been doing for a long time, which is adding bevacizumab to chemotherapy, we've been continuing to do that, especially on the right side and also on the left side, but there's also the opportunity to use the anti-EGFR drugs on the left side, which also work in addition to chemotherapy. So there's a distinction in terms of the biological behavior. There's a separation in terms of the molecular profile. There are some mutations that are more prevalent on one side than the other. Just to give you an example, MSI, microsatellite instability, is seen more on the right side, the tumors. The BRAF mutations, which we will be discussing later on, also are seen more on the right side tumors, and so on. So there is difference in the biology, and they look like the same organ, but not exactly the same. So there's differences between the two.
So, Melanie, one of the issues about, you know, we were just talking about EGFR antibodies, so cetuximab and panitumumab, and, you know, trying to identify patients who won't benefit. We talked about right side, but also we talked about molecular profiling, and we know that there's molecular profiles, specifically so-called RAS mutations, where people don't respond. I'm just kind of curious what your experience is with side effects of EGFR antibodies, because they are some of the more difficult anti-cancer therapies to utilize. And, you know, by avoiding them when they're not going to help people, you're avoiding toxicity. Any comments about what you've observed with these EGFR antibodies?
Sure. I mean, one of the main ones we use a lot, I think a primary side effect I've seen is rash, which can be really bothersome, really hard to control at times. We often elicit derm if we need them. But, you know, they've been around for so long that we do have a treatment plan in place and patients can respond, but obviously it's hard for them to walk around in their daily life having rash all over their face and their body, et cetera. Diarrhea being another one that we see. And again, we can adjust and give meds, and, you know, we talk about that consistently in visits, but can lead to more complications, dehydration, things like that.
So, Wells, you know, Philip referred to BRAF mutation, particularly V600E, and we know from melanoma for a long time now that these will respond to targeted therapy. And we've known that you see these mutations in patients with colorectal cancer, but for a long time, it looked like the BRAF inhibitors wouldn't work. And it wasn't until they started to be combined with other agents that we started to see some pretty significant efficacy. Wells, can you just sort of provide an overview of that? We put a couple questions in the poll about that, which we'll show as Wells talks.
Yeah, absolutely. So BRAF V600E, it's the most common BRAF mutation. It actually used to be called 599 because it was counted by hand back in the day, and it was mislabeled. The poor postdoc who had to count the 600 codons there. But it's in about 8 to 15% of colorectal cancer patients. As Phil said, it's more on the right side. And when that BRAF is mutated, the kinase is 500 times more active. So it's signaling 500-fold more than it's supposed to be. So you can see why it would sort of drive the biology of a tumor. It tends to be mutually exclusive with RAS mutations. So in other words, once you have a short circuit, there really isn't a selection pressure for additional signaling down the pathway. But even early on, it was noted that colorectal cancer cell lines, and my colleague at MD Anderson, Scott Kopetz, has shown a lot of this, that colorectal cancer cell lines, even BRAF mutated, don't respond to BRAF inhibition the same way that melanoma does. And it sort of challenged this idea that was kind of popular about a decade ago that we could get rid of caring about whether someone had melanoma or breast cancer or colon. All we had to do is molecular testing and we'd know what to do. Well, it turns out that the context of the tumor actually is important. It might not be important for NTRK. It might not be important for MSI-high, for instance, but seems to be important in BRAF. And there are so many ways in which the signaling pathway can go around. So in other words, you block with a middle linebacker and the pathway just goes along the side, basically. So when you block BRAF and colorectal cancer cell lines, you get increased signaling to ARAF and CRAF, for instance. So it became clear that even preclinically, even in the lab, that a combination approach was going to be needed. And it turns out that if you use a BRAF inhibitor in colorectal, you have upregulation of the EGFR pathway, and therefore it made sense to combine with either cetuximab or panitumumab to try to cut off that signaling around the inhibition. And we'll talk about the Beacon trial in some of your later slides.
So yeah, in terms of the approach, now it looks like either two or three drugs. And Philip, in melanoma, we saw this combination of encorafenib, binimetinib, seemed to be very effective. Can you talk a little bit about right now what the common treatments are for BRAF mutant colorectal cancer?
As Wells was saying, using the encorafenib alone isn't going to really work in this situation. So we have to combine it with another agent. And the first one that really comes to mind is combining with an anti-EGFR drug, because that's where the feedback is leading to increased signaling. So the combination of encorafenib with an anti-EGFR drug, and the study was done with cetuximab. And also they had the triplet with the binimetinib, which is a MEK/ERK inhibitor. However, at this point in time, it's really not clear how much benefit you have by having three drugs versus two drugs. And in my practice, I've been using the encorafenib with cetuximab, and that's what the FDA has approved for the use of treatment in this BRAF V600 mutated patients. There's also work done by Dr. Kopetz, and he had another trial which had three drugs in it, and that trial had the BRAF inhibitor plus the cetuximab, but also he used chemotherapy, and in that case it was irinotecan. So we have really two strategies here. One is using the triplet using irinotecan plus anti-BRAF and anti-EGFR, or using the anti-EGFR and BRAF combination. So these are the two options. In my practice myself, I've been using the encorafenib plus the cetuximab in this situation. In some patients, I use panitumumab because I don't think it makes a difference to use either one of them. The clinical trial was done with cetuximab, but you can also use panitumumab every 2 weeks. So that's been my experience. And the point here is that patients have to be tested, obviously, for the mutation. In my practice, I do the mutational analysis. We do the whole genomic next gen sequencing in our patients. As soon as we have someone who's diagnosed with stage 4 disease, either de novo or someone who had earlier stage and had a recurrence, we always do the genomic profiling, so we have that information. Now, the targeting of the BRAF with these combinations is now in the second line, because the trials were in the second line after the failure of the primary treatment or first line treatment. There's also now work being done to test the use of the BRAF strategy, which I just mentioned, in the frontline treatment before you treat them with anything else.